At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets Live. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to professional investor Richard Crowe, alias Cotney Rebel. So, big welcome, Richard.
Good morning, Paul.
Yeah, it's fantastic to have you back on the show. We certainly need a lot of help here because, given all the uncertainty caused by the ongoing trade tariffs, geopolitical risks, and now we've got that sort of like Damocles sword of the budget hanging over the market on the 26th of November. So, putting all those lovely catalysts together, what's your sort of view for equities over the sort of the next 12 months?
Well, having 12 months view is quite hard these days, isn't it? If you can see 3 months in front of you, you're doing quite well. So I don't know, to be honest. I think the next 6 months would probably be all right. But of course, we've had this little, everyone seems to have had a little mini panic last week on various things. I think Trump talking about lumping an extra 100% tariffs on China. And, you know, we have all this all the time, don't we? And people gradually get used to it. It's like when we had the terrorism and, you know, the first time a bomb went off in London, the markets absolutely plummeted. And in the end, when terrorist incidents happen in London, the market just, we're used to this now, you know, we can deal with this. And I think it's a bit like Trump, people are getting used to dealing with his, you know, sudden bursts of craziness. And, you know, it's a lot of it's blagging and positioning before some negotiations or something like that. So I don't think I take too much notice of what that did last week. It's October still, so I sort of come in, always come in October thinking, oh, no, I've had so many bad Octobers. And you sit there and we got through halfway through October and I think just on my Substack week before last, I said, oh, things have been ever so smooth, you know. Because after I said that, Trump came out with a statement and the market came right off. Monday it opened up all right, though, and I don't think the market's really reacted too badly. If you look at, the FTSE World All World Index, which is the AWO1, and that's staying as strong as anything. You know, I watch that for a rollover, and if I start to see a roll on that over on there, I'll get a bit cautious. But, you know, that stayed very strong. So the falls have really been the S&P, I think, over the last, you know, week or so. They needed to give a little bit back because we've had since the start of April. It's been one fantastic market, hasn't it? 6 months have just, for most small cap people, I would think, they've had a great 6 months. And it's just gone as smooth as anything. People forget what pullback is like. You know, you have this, and suddenly everyone panics, especially traders. You know, they want to, they're in there playing with money that is highly geared. And as soon as you start seeing the market go a bit iffy, they sell. And I think a lot of people will actually sell their good stocks as well. So, you know, it's where they've got profit, traders will, oh, I'll bank a profit. And then where I've got a loss, I'll hang on to the loss till I'm in profit and I'll sell it. Yeah. All the way around. It's like having a really old car that's really faithful and reliable and never lets you down. And then you buy a new car that lets you down every other day. And then saying to yourself, I'll keep the new car and get rid of the old car. You can't get anywhere. So you want, you know, stick with what you were doing and stick with the reliable stocks that tend to carry on going up. And the ones that are bad tend to carry on going down. So yeah. I always sell, get out of losers quick and stick with your winners.
Yeah. So what sort of returns have you made this year in 2025 year to date?
Well, January to April was pretty much flat. Didn't do anything over January to April. I think I was probably, might have been down about 1%, I think, from January to April. When April first got here, it's just been fantastic. One baggers everywhere. You know, I think I've had three one baggers, probably more. You know, I've had all of the gain out of the one baggers on some of them. You know, it was about six one baggers or seven, something like that I've been involved in. But some of them I've had about 50%. Some I've had, you know, 100%. Well, one I've had 200% on. So tied it all up across, because you also, you know, you've had one bag, you made 200%. You had on the way up, didn't you? You know, you had a bit more, and it dilutes the actual percentage amount you've actually made on your shares in total. So I'd say from August, from April to now, I'm up about 35%. So
wow,
over total. So
fantastic. I think
that's pretty reasonable, really. So I have had some crackers. Some real crackers. But that's what I go for. You know, I look for one baggers, and I look for as many of them as I can find that look really secure. And then a couple will go wrong, but the majority will go right, and you make your money that way. So.
Yeah. What's your cash position at the moment in terms of percentage, or are you all in stocks at the moment?
10% cash at the moment.
10% cash, right. Okay. Yeah, well, 35%, you'll have a nice Christmas this year, won't you? Absolutely stellar.
Yeah.
It's a stellar performance. Okay, let's move into one stock. We've got Nigel. He's asking about one of your winners, Carl Klo, which I think is sort of like a designer and manufacturer, sort of contract manufacturer of precision parts, which go into sort of like defense, industrial applications, energy applications, gone through sort of trials and tribulations. But when we chatted about 18 months, 2 years ago, and you were saying, I quite like the CEO here, and it might be an interesting one. Anyway, it's trebled since then.
Right, actually, 18 months, it's 10 bagged. In 18 months, it's 10 bagged. From there, it was from 6 pence up to 60 pence. Wow. So that's been one. It's 2 bags since April when I, you know, that was one of my biggest holdings.
What's your latest on it?
They're no longer a little plastics specialist manufacturer of plastics and precision plastics and stuff like that. They're now a solutions provider, and that's the thing everybody's missing, because now they're actually making proprietary products for themselves, and they're actually. You know, companies actually coming to them and saying, we've got this design, we want you to make it for us, here you go. They're actually going to them and saying, you know, we've got this issue, can you put, you know, make this particular product for us, and you design it and do all the work in that. So it's a much more high margin business going forward, which is great. And Frank Doornbusch promised that he was going to get the margins up nicely, looking for a return on sales of 10%. Well, he's got it up to 8%. They were down at about, nearly nowhere when he first took over. So this year, I think he'll get them to 10%, which will be another 2% on return of sales. Sales are going to grow, but first 6 months of this year, they've also got the part where they closed down one of their factories in the US. They closed Tucson, was it, I think, and they're working out of Pennsylvania now. And so they've only had 6 months gains from this closed factory. So the first half of this year, they're going to get gains from that too. And that's a fantastic turnaround company. The pension was one of the main problems with them. They had depending on how you work it out, it's either a 37 million or 54 million pension, somewhere around there, depending on whether it's how the actuaries work it out or how the actual pension is worked out. So what they've actually done, they paid 5 million this year on top on the first half of this year, they've paid 5 million into the pension. So that will be, you know, that will be out of the way. It then drops to 3.5 like it always was. Mm. So they've even had that, and they're still growing, even paying a higher pension. And the pension is going to become an ever decreasing part of the business now. You know, the market cap's up. What's the market cap now? I'm not quite
it's
sure.
About 48 million.
Yeah, well, 18 months ago, it was about 5 million, and you were dealing with a pension that size. Now you're up at 48 million. I think they'll probably double again, and you can easily see that if ever they had to do a small fundraising to reduce a bit of the pension, or whatever they do, it's there, and the profits are growing fast as the debt's actually fallen from about 29 million to 19 million over the last year. It will tick up a little bit this year because they made the pension. The 5.1 million pension payment. So in the first half of this year, that will tick up a little bit, but that'll probably come off again in the second half. So I think it'll probably be down to 17, 16 million of debt. The market cap will double. So there'll have plenty of profit growth and debt falling, and the pension being less of a thing. And that's, you know, the best recovery plays are companies that have got a lot of debt or got a lot of financial issue, yeah, because the share price is so bombed out. And that's what it was 18 months ago. And you've literally got to take a brave, you know, brave decision and say, I think they can get this round with a new guy there. And you've got to take a look at the directors as well and, you know, be convinced that the directors know what they're actually talking about. And he is really convincing, Frank Doornbusch.
Yeah.
He's, you know, I think a really good CEO that they've got in there who's got a plan, knows what he's doing. And recently they bought, I think the CFO bought 10,000 and he bought 50,000 just after the last trading statement.
Yeah.
And they've got their results end of November, beginning of December. So they bought them at the last point they could buy shares at before the close period. So that all bodes well, and I think they're gonna beat with this set of results and wake the market up again. So
yeah, I mean they're certainly not expensive. They're still on sort of like, you know, only 10 times PE, even after all the sort of like, you know, the price momentum, price movement. Have you decided to run all of your position, or have you decided to take some? Because I mean, obviously you've made such an enormous amount of money out of this one.
I bought more a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, really?
When the directors went in and had some more, I bought some more as well. I didn't buy a lot more. It was only 15,000 of them. But it's one where I feel really quite confident. I remember you know, things like Thomas Cook. You know, they had a bundle of debt. They had about $2 billion of debt, and the market cap was $250 million. And everyone was saying to me, you're crazy buying these. They're down at 20 pence. You know, they're finished. And they got a new CEO in, and she cut the debt by 100 million just like that. And then she bought a load of shares. And then suddenly the shares went up, and then sort of a few brokers sort of like got behind and said, oh, yeah, you know, this is. And as that sort of start ballooning, the market cap goes up. And so people start saying, oh, yeah, you can see they could possibly, you know, do a fundraising now for 200 million and stop them going bust. And it tickled on a bit more. And then people started to say, actually, the shares got that much now. They wouldn't need to do much dilution to get the. And they ain't bagged in 6 months. And it was a fantastic, fantastic stock to bought. And everyone was saying to me, I was absolutely bonkers buying them at 19p and then selling them out at well over, I think, about £1.60. I think I sold them out in 6 months. And that's one of the best, fastest multi-baggers I've ever had. It was fantastic.
Yeah. Well, you paid for your house, didn't you?
Yeah, a lot of it. Thomas Cook paid for a lot of the house. Yeah, yeah. Thomas Cook and Future Publications and a bit of Greg's. So,
Right, very nice. So what sort of size position have you got now in Carclo as a percentage of your total portfolio? It's, just broadly.
I'm just trying to think. Hold on. I've got something. It's about 20%.
Wow. Okay.
20% of my portfolio.
And what's the sort of maximum would you run it to?
I feel I'm probably at the maximum there now. I don't really want to get it because it can be a bit liquid. I think I'll. Especially if they start going up, they start to become far too big a position. I never used to take big positions like this. Mm. You know, I used to always make sure I stayed below 10%. But in the end, you're trimming your winners so often to stay under 10%, and you dilute your own. You know, really when you find a good one, I want to go in it heavy because that's how you make your money: getting it heavy, getting it early, and you really do make your money there. And so I've gone in a lot heavier in stocks now. I've got far fewer stocks than I had, and I just staying big in a few of them, the few that I feel really confident in.
You did. It's the same strategy as myself, to be honest. Anything more than 20%, I'll definitely type stop loss. But actually, I have a concentrated portfolio as well, and that's how you make your sort of alpha generation over time.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've ever done a sort of like an 8-bagger in 6 months. In fact, I think I've only ever done a 4-bagger. So you've done pretty damn brilliantly there.
That's out of the tech boom. You know, there was a few about the tech boom, weren't there, which was quite fun, but they weren't real shares, really. You weren't really. This was to track down something where there was value and stuff like that. And so, that stays in my mind very well, that one.
Yeah. Okay, good.
The more brokers read it, the more people, you know, more other brokers joined in, you know, and it was like, it's always the same. Brokers have a race to the bottom and race to the top on what they're going to forecast. Yeah. But on the way down, they're all cutting us more than anybody else. And on the way up, they all try to leapfrog each other and raise forecasts to not be left out, which is happening with Rolls-Royce lately. You know, as soon as they said they were doing well, all the brokers are in, they're up in their forecasts. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy eventually. So, good.
Yeah. Okay, we've got one going out the other way. We've got Toby. He's asking about B&M, which came out with a bit of another profit warning just this morning. I don't know whether you cover it at all or you look at it, but basically this is a business that does all things sort of like goods and cheap value products and stuff in these retail outlets. And they've come out with a series of profit warnings. What was your take on this morning's announcement? The shares are down 17% again.
Well, I had them on my recovery list about 6 months ago and waiting for them. And then they got a new CEO in. And he, I forget what his name is now, but he's a foreign guy. Mm. And he was buying shares. He bought a couple of million quid's worth of shares straight after he was in there. But I did have a look and I could see that it was in his contract to buy them. So I thought, well, I won't take too much notice of that really. But I did buy some and the chart started to make a bowl. And I think they're just around April. Started to do that little curve up. There was a nice little bowl starting on there. And then they came out with the last trading update, which was awful. And then they've come out this morning with this £7 million worth of freight error that they've got that's caused the £40 million downgrade in their forecasts, which, you know, warnings coming in threes. So I've got my watch list again, but there'll be a point when you see the chart change and not till I see that sort of bottom forming that will sort of go in and buy them again. So I did take up, you know, I come out, I reduced a little bit before they had the warning. And I got caught with some in the warning as well. So across the field, I just came out with a small loss on that one. But, you know, that's part of the game. You know, you have a few small losses. You can take those if you have a couple of one baggers or whatever. So, there'll be a time for it. You know, there's always people are a bit short of money at the moment. And I would have thought, this is the sort of area where people are trying to save a few quid and buying their shopping in there. So,
What's the sort of competitive position against the Chinese though? That's the sort of like one of the areas, isn't it?
That's one. There's always competition. You know, Poundland and all these different things. We've got QD down there. I see whoever they are. I'm not sure where they come from, but there's all these sort of discount stores that you're fighting against, and there's no real differentiator, is there? You know, you've got to have something really different unless you're in a niche. I like discount, you know, people that sell cheap if they've got a particular niche and where people go there because they're going to get everything they want. But B&M and Powerslip sell anything, isn't it? It's that they can get hold of cheap.
Yeah.
So there's no distinguishing, you know, mark for either any of these companies, no loyalty or any brand loyalty or anything like that. So, you know, they've got to be cheap. You've got to be cheap to buy them. They've got to be really cheap to buy them. You've got to know that they're on a recovery and don't stay in that long.
Yeah.
Find something better.
Okay, let's move back to sort of the industrial sector. Let's go to some industrial communications. We've got another one which has done brilliantly for you, Filtronic, which has it did nothing for about sort of 25 years. And then the last 2 years, it won a contract with SpaceX, with Elon Musk's outfit, and the shares, as I say, have just gone to the moon. How do you see this one going forward? It's not as cheap, obviously, as Carl Clough, but the shares have 10-bagged.
Yeah, I reduced a fair bit on mine because the PE got a little bit up with itself. And also the forecast reduced for the coming year. So you're really asking, you know, where's the gain coming from if the PE's this high? You know, even if something really nice and surprising comes out, you're only going to get the PE up to where it was, it still probably won't look cheap. But having said that, you know, this satellite malarkey is when that takes off, and there's, you know, see satellites come down every sort of few years, don't they? You know, they don't stay up there forever. So there's a replenishment cycle, and there's the base stations and there's the satellites. So if they can get in both, so there's the potential down there that, you know, and it's a real hot sector, this RF radio frequency. MM wave is a real hot sector for communications because it's low power and it can send signals faster at low power. So I still like the business. I think it's great, and I think they're probably going to pick up a few big contracts elsewhere. So that's why I continue to hold. Yeah. It's probably not the cheapest one, and I wouldn't have, you know, a great beholding in it at the moment myself when there's so many other little cheap stocks about. But yeah, great. Fabulous.
No, I'm with you. It's 40 times PE and 5 times sales. But as you rightly point out, they've got a history of beating expectations, and that's those ratings say to me they're going to smash them, not just beat them.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Okay, in that same area of RF and microwave technology, we've got CML Microsystems, which might do semiconductor sort of chips and stuff to the Internet of Things and digital radio, plus a bit of defense and into satellites as well. Again, a bit of a sort of sleeping small cap for years and years and years. What sort of caught your eye on this one?
Sorry, it caught my eye on them because I always remember that this CML were into RF frequency and stuff like that. I went back and had another look at them when Filtronics was going, and I noticed they've made an acquisition. They bought this company, I forget the name of it now, not fair. It was
Micro Technology or Microwave Technology.
Yeah, and the chairman there was Nathan Zomer. Mm. And they bought the company. He became a non-executive director. The thing they've got is, the first thing they said was, with the successful completion of the operational phase of a multi-year transformational strategy, the business is now poised to enter a new chapter focused on sustainable growth and long-term value creation. Mm. Well, one of the things they've got is this digital radio Mondial. Have you heard of this?
Yeah, it's Asian, isn't it?
India and Malaysia and China as well, and that the people over scattered over a wide area have not really got any form of communication. They don't get to hear, there's not telephone masts up everywhere for them, but this radio frequency can transmit over all different wavelengths. It's really quite clever, but the real problem has been they've never been able to power it because you need these lithium batteries, which are so expensive to have the power. But now they've managed to, with a bit of technology and AI and stuff, they said they've got the power down to using a couple of AA batteries on them. So now they've become very viable for all sorts of people. The Indian government have rolled it out on a big scale, and it's going out to Malaysia, and Malaysia are taking on, and I think China, they're talking about a lot of places anyway. They won a big contract quite recently, but I think there's a lot of contracts going to be coming in because they're talking about a customer base of billions. Mm. So potentially billions of customers out there to take these radios. And the company they bought was the transformational bit. So having them in the business as well, they've found a lot of new products because the old products used to be like storage rather than communications. And they obviously noticed, they noticed that storage was not a growth area going forward for them, bit the bullet, and they decided to reinvent themselves doing all this type of technology. So the guy, Nathan Zomer, the former chairman at the other business, became a non-exec, and he took 4%, I think, of the company. His payment for the acquisition, he had 4% in shares. And then just recently, I think he should have had a cash payment.
Yes.
And about 1.5 million, but he's just taken that in shares as well. So he's just taken another 1.5 million in shares. Other directors have been buying shares here. The chart's starting to make a bowl. Mm. They've got, this new, you need something new, don't you? Something transformational to make a business change. It's one of old Slater's, I was mentioning that the other day, Jim Slater's Zulu principles is that, the business has got to have something different, something that's changed the business for it to be a one that's going to race away. And they've got this with these semiconductors. And there's other products they've got as well. It's not just these semiconductors, for these phones. They've got, satellite communication where Filtronic is, and they've got defense, all sorts. So it looks like one of those shares that could be one of these real crackers. I did hold it about 25 years ago, just after the tech boom, when everyone was buying everything tech. That went from like pound to £7 in the no time.
Yeah.
So I've got a bit of past love for the stock, really. So
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, with a non-exec putting effectively $2 million of his own cash into the business, and that's obviously a big endorsement, big sort of like a show of confidence. But also there's no broker notes out there at the moment, which means that people have been operating in a vacuum. So you can understand why it hasn't had a lot of attraction, hasn't got people sort of like excited yet. But they did sign a $30 million 12-year contract with a big OEM not long ago. And I'm with you. This has got all the hallmarks of potentially, and underline and italicized, potentially being in the right place at the right time. and doing and benefiting from this, you know, basically doing low powered RF microwave chips in growing secular areas.
Exactly. I sort of, you know, these things sort of come along. Sometimes you're lucky, you look at something just at the right time and it's there and you read it and suddenly you realize all the little pieces are just coming into place. And with it being so liquid, as you say, no broker commentary on it. It's a bit like one I bought recently, AEP, the
Anglo-Eastern Plantation.
AEP, I can always call it AEP. So the Palmer, they've got no broken notes on theirs as well, you know, and they've just gone into the FTSE 250. And I'm wondering what these fund managers were ever looking at to, you know, to get there and position themselves for a FTSE 250 entry. It's one bagged. So it's fabulous, you know, that come along at that time. I quite like them. Dialight is another one. I think Dialight, is it Dialight? It's got, Dialight's got forecasts. It's Brighton doesn't have forecasts. That's another one that's operating in a vacuum, you know. So some of these small caps, if you can find a good one, like you say, on this, everyone's blind, you do a bit of research on them yourself and find the information, then you can, that's where you can make your money.
Yeah. Well, we've got George, just going to stick with Anglo-Eastern Plantation. We've got George is asking about it because it's still very cheap, 7x PE. It does basically, it's a vertically integrated Indonesian palm oil grower and miller, obviously based out in Asia. I'm guessing the sort of the demand drivers are more sort of like use of palm oil in food and biodiesel and stuff like that. And supply depends on how many growers there are. But what's your take on it at the moment after a one bagging, but still being relatively cheap?
Not somewhere I normally play, really, but they came out with a train update about a few months ago. And I looked at it and I just thought, it's crazy. You know, they've got like 200 million in cash and the market cap was about 500 million, I think, so something like that at the time. And then I looked at the PE and the PE was about 4. And you just sort of think, well, they've got all that cash, they've got Peter, and the earnings were growing at 60, 70%. You just think, why is this being ignored? And that was the flag to say to me, go and buy some. And I bought quite a lot, actually, and I've still got them. And they're the PE's on, and the PE is something at the moment now after this is something daft, isn't it? What is it?
Yep. I've got seven.
A PE of 7. They're going to beat that. When these results come out for this one, they're going to beat it. A director's actually been buying shares as well. One of the things is they replant these plantations, but there's a couple of types of palms that they use. There's a different type of palm which yields a lot more. It's a bit more faff to get the oil out, but it yields much more oil. So they're replanting some of these plantations with a different type of palm. So you'll get more production per square mile of these palm oil plantations. So there's that, and there's the demand as well, and the chart's going up nice and sharply recently on palm oil. So that's a good sign. And I think that these sort of waves, so as you go up to end of Christmas, the palm oil price tends to rise for some reason. When I've looked at the chart, I don't know if that's a long-standing thing, but there seems to be this wave of them going up towards the end. So the next sort of few months, they're probably at their peak for this year in palm oil. Maybe they'll keep going, I don't know, but, you know, it's cheap. And they just bought another little company for 12 million. It's just out of cash. They've got 200 million. They could keep doing that all the time, keep buying more and more palm oil plantations or take a big one. Or they might look attractive to someone like MP Evans, who are a little bit larger than them, but only a little bit, I think. So it might be out of their scale, but it's cheap. And it pays a great dividend as well. So it's got everything you want from a share, really. You know, it's demand, cash, earnings. And even if you don't know what they do, you know, if you're not that au fait with palm oil, I know it's in all my peanut butter when I eat it. And I know it's in a lot of the cars. Cars use it when they can use it for ethylene or ethanol or whatever it is. So, just buy that one.
Yeah, and it seems as though they make most of their money. They sell it on dollars a lot of the time. So you can actually get cash out. They're paying a dividend. You can actually get cash out of the business, which is great, which is fab. Okay, we've got SE81. He's asking about Funding Circle, that is basically a platform that does business-to-business loans in the UK. And recently won an important legal case, actually, to validate that the assignment of its loans to other third parties was okay. It had a claim against from directors on personal guarantees. But anyway, it seems to have won that. What's your latest on Funding Circle?
Well, fabulous little company. Seen the pace of its earnings growth. It's grown earnings at about over 100% per annum. Mm. Over the past year, it's starting from a low base. It's something like 600 or 700%. But so that's meaningless, really. But going forward, it's forecast to grow at about 130%, 110%, 86% for the next 3 years. So it's got massive earnings growth. Lots of this, you know, is high operational gearing. So it's all going to fall to the bottom line. The more sales they get, they've got two parts to the business. One is providing loans to small businesses, but it's all done. No one seems to have picked up on the fact that this is AI and it's, you know, machine learning, which is a form of AI. And no one seems to have picked up on the fact that it's their proprietary AI business. And as it's growing, it's proving ever more accurate. You know, they produce a loan for someone in about 6 minutes. In no time at all, you go to them and say, in principle, would you lend me this? Just key in your data in the computer, and the computer says yes. It's not like the one on Little Britain, and the computer says no. It's their computer goes through it, and it's more accurate than all the work these great big banks do on making sure that risk is right down low. They have far fewer defaults. And like you say, that legal case was a bit of an issue, because although they'd said they know they're fully in the clear, there's always that nagging doubt in the back of your mind. And the shares came off from that, and they've still come off a little bit. They've got two parts of the business. They've got this flexi card that they use, which is the second part of the business they've created. And that's growing, you know, fantastic rate, 50, 60%, I think, a year on the flexi card. And that, I think, they could possibly sell off at some point and just be, you know, because they actually are on the hook for some of the loans with the flexi card. With the other business, where they provide business loans, they're just an intermediary. So they've not got all the cash on their balance sheet for the loans or whatever. So, and it's running on a silly PE, an absolutely silly PE, when they've got like 100 million cash that's unencumbered. And I think 400 million market cap. So there's no debt involved there. They're running, I think the forward PE is something like 14 at the moment, falling to something like 8 or something silly like that. So if they come out and say they're beating forecasts, and people look at those forecasts going forward and the pace of growth, and then they realise it's, you know, an AI-based machine code business, it's their proprietary business. So I think if this was in the States, it'd be trading on a much higher rating.
Yeah,
and or sooner or later, someone from the States is going to come along and say, "What, all that for a PE of 8? Thanks very much. We'll give you double that, and we'll be stealing it off you."
Yeah. So how resilient is the business to a recession? Because obviously, it supplies loans to small businesses and gets most of the funding from effectively big institutions who supply the loans, the capital, and then it places effectively that capital through businesses wanting it. Well, how resilient is that model if we go through a downturn and you start getting an increase in credit defaults in that small, medium-sized area?
Yeah, well, you know, if you're in your sort of area, you are liable to defaults no matter what. If you get a recession or, you know, business things get tough, but interest rates have been coming down rather than going up at the moment. So whether that's going to reverse or not, I don't know. But obviously, if the climate gets tougher, then you probably are going to get higher defaults. But I don't know whether they're, you know, I'm not sure that the defaults would be that much greater than what they get at the moment to be that destructive to them, any more than it is to banks or anything like that. And it's been well run. You know, when it's Lisa Jacobs there, she seems to have, she's run it crackingly well since she's been there and delivered on all her promises. And like I say, you can only go by what business says and then what they deliver. And I think they're going to deliver it. And if we have a recession, then probably there are going to be a reduction in earnings. But are we going to have a recession? I don't think we are. I don't feel like we're that far away from the last. You know, these recessions come along every 7-8 years or whatever, don't they? You know, you have these maybe a bit longer, but I sort of think, you know, the last one was COVID, and then we had Ukraine, and all those things have all clipped a lot of excitement out of the small caps because people sort of shy away that they had Ukraine. Oh, shares all plummeted. Don't want to touch them again. Same when we had COVID. They get these big falls and they get stuck and they can't sell. And people have shied away. And I sit there and I think, you know, the actual look of the economy, everyone's gloomy because of Rachel Reeves and what she's doing and everything else. And, are we going to have to borrow more and businesses are struggling? You hear all that. But in amongst those, there's lots of little small-cap businesses that are doing fantastically well. And they've just been tarred with the same brush. You know, institutions are not interested in chasing these small caps. Very few of them anyway. There's a couple like Richard Staveley's. And they're the ones that are doing well, aren't they? Richard Staveley, he's doing a cracking time, small caps. Lance Hulse, he's another one that's having a great time in small caps. And you sort of look around and think, well, you know, they're being underestimated. There's a lot of little companies there that are just being ignored until they get waved in front of the nose with a great big, you know, we've beat forecast by a mile. And then all these funds are suddenly interested.
Yeah. Well, you haven't done badly yourself, mate. So 35%, I think you beat Staveley and you beat Hall. So
But it's easier, isn't it? When you've got less money to invest, you're more nimble. You can get in and you can get out. When it's the likes of these funds, they've got, you know, they have to start buying when the shares are still falling, really, in order to get their position. So I know it's easier for a private investor to be able to, you know, be more nimble than these guys. So.
You're too modest, Richard, you are by mile. But anyway, such is life. Okay, let's move on to another sector. We've got Zuluk. He's asking about transportation technology company Journeo that puts sort of like live information boards into buses, bus stops and train stations, and also has just bought, has inked a deal, I think, to buy a business that does critical infrastructure, sort of monitoring and CCTV and stuff like that. Shares have absolutely been on a ripper, no doubt about it. But anyway, he's asking, what's your sort of your latest on this one?
Yeah, I like them. I bought them because I thought the they fit the Zulu principle, Jim Slater's Zulu principle. I went through it and they've got all the features in there for, you know, something new, director buying, blah, blah, blah. Although director sold a few last week, I don't think Slater said that was too much of a problem for you. It's like one sell. If they're constantly selling, then you've got to be careful. But yeah, they've got they order live information on the station platforms and bus stops and stuff. And they just bought this other company, which is like a security company. Yeah. And a few people were saying, oh, you know, why'd they want that? But then a couple of weeks ago, I was watching about all these people that are being attacked on trains, a rise of 30%. So I suppose the things go hand in hand. If you're doing a bit of CCTV on the trains as well and you're selling them a data system that puts up all the times, you've already got your feet under the table there for selling them security stuff as well. And the CEO there...
Russ Singleton,
that's it. He's been there for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years, and since he came, the shares have just gone upwards.
Yeah.
He sounds very confident. He's proved himself, and I sort of think he's the type of guy who says it as it is, and you know, there's no bull there. It's all you know. I've delivered, and we're going to deliver. And he sounds very confident, and I think they're on a pretty decent PE for a stock that could be regarded as a Zulu stock. So,
yeah. Do they have any recurring revenues in this business at all? Because it seems to be quite project orientated, and he's basically a system integrator of technology into these application areas where the company's now got a very good brand.
I'm not sure what proportion the recurring revenues are. So I only bought them about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I'm still going through a lot of stuff on them, and that's one of the things I haven't looked at. But I've only taken a small position at the moment, so but it's just going on performance and the amount that they keep selling all the time. I think it's one where they've got a position now in the UK where they're sort of trying to explain more things. I think they've got a position where they're edging quite a few other companies out. When you look at all the logos and stuff of all the companies that they're doing business on, they've got a website with all the, and they've got all the major companies, you know, they've picked up. So once you get to that sort of point, I feel that There's a couple of other companies. My mate's a coach operator, and he uses a couple of companies as well. And they don't. They all seem to struggle compared to this one. So they seem to have something special about them. But I can't tell you on the recurring revenues. I'm not sure whether they were.
Yeah.
What proportion of the recurring revenues?
I think they're basically turning into the go-to provider of sort of like real-time information systems in the UK. I don't think they've got proprietary software or IPR, but because of the know-how and the way they implement these projects, I think that's just a winning strategy. And they're like the best operator in this particular sector because it isn't easy to win these government or private sector deals. And I'm with you. I think this critical infrastructure CCTV business they've bought is and a perfect fit because I know the government is now indicated that it's assigned sort of national security status to a lot of things like data centers and all these other critical. So it's got more things to monitor. So I think it's in the right place at the right time. Okay, good. Let's move sector. Stay in the technology, but Harry is asking about GB Group, which is basically an IED identification software company. Also does location. Used to be an absolute darling of AIM sort of like 20 years ago. Then made a major acquisition in the States, which seemed to have sort of like disturbed the business. And they're still trying to really integrate and turn around that US operation. But they came out with a trading update last week. What sort of caught your eye on this one? Trades at 13 times PE, so for a tech business, it's not expensive.
Watched it all the time. In all honesty, it's not really my bag of, you know, my bag at all, really. Security and security software and stuff like that that I don't fully understand.
Yeah.
But they always traded on a PE of something like 30 odd, you know. Really. And everyone used to say to me, oh, GB Group's fantastic. You know, you've seen these. Oh, you've got to buy these. The rating seems so high. You know, I couldn't really understand why the rating was so high. Anyway, having watched them and seen them come right way off, they've gone from, they're going from AIM to fully listed.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a lot of AIM inheritance tax type funds that have been selling off. And now they're coming to the point where they're going to go on fully listed. Then probably a lot of that selling will be done soon or shortly, or has been done. And I think that's what the driver of the reduction in the share price has been. And so I bought a small few on the basis that I think probably the shares will start going up as soon as they, or shortly after they go into on the main market. And they'll go into the FTSE 250 at some point, I think, because if their market cap doesn't fall much more, they'll go in the FTSE 250 as well. So there'll be some tracker funds that need to buy. So when you get to that point when they actually go in, there's probably enough funds around to take the shares off of the people that are selling from the inheritance tax point of view, and the equilibrium will go the other way and the shares will start moving up again. So I bought them purely on that basis, not for anything I know about them, just they've always traded on a lot higher, and there's a short-term little point there where they should bounce, or hopefully bounce, and that's an opportunity, but it's not a stock that I would really want to keep because I don't really understand it. It always trades on a rating far too high for me, and it doesn't look like a one bagger either. So, you know, it's like somewhere to park your money and make a little bit of money short term where you're looking for another one bagger.
I think the thing which has been their Achilles heel of late is their organic growth. It's only been pedestrian at sort of like low single digits. I think it was 1% the last trading update. But if they can ever get that back to where they were, sort of low double digits, sort of 10, 15, 20%, that sort of stuff, or get it towards the industry, which is about 12% per annum, then these shares will really re-rate because you'll get all that operating leverage. The issue, I think, most investors have been scratching the head is why they aren't growing as fast as the market. And I think it's because their US business has been a bit of a drag on it. But if they can turn it round, then you should see the improved trading performance. So, I think it's a bit of a sort of like on the watch list at the moment for me anyway. But,
I thought the chart had just started to change and it just started to make a move up. So I bought at that point thinking they were near the bottom and they've come back off a bit. It may be just a general market, or it may be that they're going further down. I don't know, but I'll watch there and I'll add if I see it. Sort of looks like it's made a proper base there.
Okay, good. Let's move sectors. We've got Chris. He's asking about contract manufacturer and of all things beauty products sort of brand owner, Crichton, trades at about 8.5 times PE. As I say, it does a blend of its own brands. It does contract manufacturing, and I think it also does private label for supermarkets.
Yes.
How do you see this one?
Well, they come out with a good trade statement in April, and the share price is nearly doubled, and it's come all the way back again.
Yeah.
And this is another one. You know, you won't find forecasts, or you struggle to find forecasts. I don't know if they've got forecasts now. A broker might have come out with some forecasts. I don't know. I don't think they have.
Yeah.
But they're really well run. The girl that took over, Pippa Clark, she knows the business back to front. And Bernard Johnson and William McAvoy, they've both left the business now, and then she's running it. And they, you know, she's done the sort of things they should have done, you know, ages ago to get the cost down, because they had two properties or several properties. They sold off some land, but they've now moved down a lot of stuff from another property and got themselves to a place over where they're just at one factory now, and they're not doing all the night shifts. They were doing like 3 shifts round the clock. She's cut all those out. They've taken old production lines apart themselves and made a new production line for a particular product, and they're sweating the assets far more than they've ever done. And they started paying a dividend again straight away after about a year ago, and people were saying, what are you doing paying a dividend so quickly? Are you sure? And finance director was there, and he's just been promoted to the board because he was they're happy with the job he's done there, and they seem very confident about paying this dividend. And things like war paint, you know, W7L, and what's the one that is lips in it, eyes, lips, and something out in America is the big one. It's I can never remember what it is. Eyes, lips, and face. Eyes, lips, and face.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they've been in great demand for quite a while. But these supermarkets are starting to do their own brands now, and sort of like they're not just taking W7L stuff. They're knocking up their own brands as well as when they call them, dupes. Yeah. So they're a duplicate of the W7L are doing dupes more or less, and then supermarkets are doing dupes of W7L and the main one. So I think there's got a lot of work from there on that sort of stuff. And their own brands as well. They bought a few brands. They bought Emma Hardy for a massive amount, Bernard Johnson before. And they've wiped all, you know, written a load off on that one. And so they start getting those brands selling more as well. And there's that. So the last lot of results were good. But the problem is, you go 6 months and you don't hear anything from the company. Most all traders get bored. You know, I even reduced after it got up like bonkers. I sold half my stake because I know what traders are like. I'm going to sit there for 6 months with cash sat there doing nothing, and I may as well put that to good use. And so probably over the next month I'll start adding again and wait for the trading update to come out, because you know, everyone sees the share going down suddenly, traders, and they think, oh, there's something nasty's happened. You know, we haven't been told. You know, every time a share goes down, because it's just an illiquid small cap stock, that's what happens. And, you know, you let all these gremlins creep into your mind, you know, and sort of you think this is going on, that's going on, and that eats away inside their heads. And then you just got to say, no, this is just what happens, you know, with a share price in a stock that's illiquid. It's got no broker notes out there, and you don't hear for it 6 months.
Yeah.
So I think in the next month or so, they'll probably come out with a good trading statement. Maybe it will do the same as it did last time, go up bonkers again, then we'll wait another 6 months for it to some news to come out. So but that's the joys of small caps.
Yeah, well, he could potentially do a McBride on that private label. You never know, and still has 4 or 5 shops. We've got, say, just an extra comment from Zuluk on Journeo. He says that they do have recurring revenues of about, and science SaaS software, of the mid-teens mix. So thanks, Sue. Look, that's useful to know.
Yeah, I thought it was 10% or so, but I didn't know how much more.
Yeah. Okay, we've got two. So he's asking about Shoe Zone. I don't suppose you've got any update on. I know you've liked it in the past, haven't you? Shoe retailer.
I had a great time with that. That was getting out of the lows just after the COVID thing. But the two brothers seem to have had a falling out. There's the Smith brothers, and they seem to have a bit of a fallout, and they seem to be like this. It's a bit like watching Oasis, and they sort of, and you know, they love each other one minute, and they're ringing each other's next the next. So,
yeah.
it, you know, it become our, I think with a team who's starting to eat them and the Chinese market is starting to eat into them or not, I don't know, you know, because people are buying. I'm not sure buying shoes from China online is the greatest. I bought a couple of tops from China, and you know, they're muscly man like me who takes a 4XL. You don't get a 4XL that fits me from China. And there's no such thing as one size fits all. But when it comes to shoes, it's more important. You can struggle a bit in a top that's one size too small. You got shoes on that's one size too small. You know, you can't do that. And sending stuff back to China is just an absolute nonsense.
Yeah.
You know, you just can't, you know, it takes forever and a day. You wait ages for the stuff to get here, you know, no matter what they say. So I don't think Temu's a particular problem. I think their issue is they just overlooked some of the competition that they've got here, and the brothers had a fallout as how to run it and who's running it. So I haven't gone back in there yet, and I don't know whether I would actually. Now I've been in there, dating old girlfriends is never a good idea. It's never the same the second time around. So I probably would give them a miss, and I'm ambivalent about them at the moment. They're probably going to get themselves out. I don't think they've got any real big major issues, but I'm not sure that those growth spurts are going to be there again that they had before. Well, the brothers did buy a lot of shares in 22, I think it was. So they seem pretty confident. It's if they can get their act together between them and not start beating each other up every 5 minutes.
Yeah, okay. We've got a quick question from AL8. He's asking, do you have any advice on how to decide when to sell a stock? Not to buy, but when to sell. Is it a chart, the bowl? Is it poor performance? Whatever it is.
If I'm selling, I watch the chart for definitely. And sort of if I see a rolling top, that's a warning sign to me. Just like you would see, it's the opposite of a bowl. So a rolling top is quite an indicator of a top. So I would probably start selling if I saw a rolling top. I wouldn't sell out everything, but I'd start trimming. And the longer that rolling top continued, I'd start taking off a bit more. It's very difficult to, you know, you've got to say to yourself, what is the current PE now? You know, I look for, can it one bag in a year again? Mm. That's what I look for when I buy a stock. Can it one bag in a year? And if it can, I want to buy it and hold it. And it get to a year down the line. And if it looks like it's still got another one bagger in it in a year, then I'll hold it, or close to a one bagger. But once I start seeing stuff that's a lot lower than that, I'm paying money for risk that I'm not getting a real reward for. So I constantly try and I will sell stuff that looks the most expensive out of my portfolio and buy something that looks a lot cheaper. If I see something that's cheaper, I'll start trimming the most expensive one. So that's the way I work, but I don't suddenly sort of think I've got to sell that share now. It'd be I find something else before that's a better place to go to, or the chart doesn't look so good. Other than that, I'd keep running them really, and I might just clip a little bit of profit on the way up, but as they one bag, you know, so sell 20% on the one bagger and do it again on the two bag and stuff like that, and that way you eventually take all your money out and it's free carry.
Good. Excellent suggestion. Okay, let's in that vein, actually, let's segue nicely into another stock. We've got Sarah. She's asking about The Works, which does actually seem to have a bit of a rolling top here. What's your sort of later? This is basically the greetings and all sort of like value items, not greetings, but value items in sort of local high streets and stuff. Shares have done very well overall, certainly in the last 12 months, but they've started to pull off a bit.
I mean, in April, I think it was, just before the train update, so they two-bagged, they nearly two-bagged for me from there. So that was one of the two-baggers that I had. And I'm not sure that's a rolling top, actually. I sort of think it's the start of another sort of bit of a bowl. And that comes down from there on the left. Looking at my chart on a shorter time base, I suppose if you could put that on sort of like 3 months.
Yeah.
Last move down there is probably today or something like that, I think. But I'm not sure. I'm not convinced it's a rolling top. It's drifted down. But I think that's just because, you know, they came out with a trading statement and people, it's been such a fickle sort of share to have where it comes out 1 minute, it's doing great. Oh, we're not doing so great. It's doing great. And people are not used to the fact that it's going to say it's doing well and it's doing well again 2 years running. But they've got... One of the things they've got for them, they had the national insurance rise, which has obviously walloped them because they're retail and they've got a lot of staff. But last year they had £1 million headwind from freight containers. And this year it's, I was speaking to the CEO, this year it turns into £1 million tailwind for them. So there's a big reversal there just on freight alone. And there's lots of other things. They've moved into this just selling product, highlighting products that for kids to use that are not on computer screens. So it's like screenless activities. So it'd be arts and crafts and stuff like that. And I noticed the BBC are sort of like pushing that as well, really, that they're safe places for people to be. And they've got that Hey Dougie, the thing done by Andrew Armstrong. He voices it over and it's saying it's a safe place to be. And I think a lot of parents want their kids more involved in doing things that are not on the online, you know, what these kids are seeing. I don't know. It's quite frightening. Yeah. And so I think they've found themselves a nice little niche there. And they're surrounded by, they brought on a lot of guys have taken big shareholdings that have got a lot of retail experience. Mm. And they've surrounded themselves on the company now with these guys that can advise them and do stuff. And so it remains to be seen, but I think they're probably going to have another surprise to the upside in the next statement.
What's the difference between these guys, though, and B&M? I mean, I know I'm not a retail guru on this, but I mean,
theirs is all crafts and sort of like, you know, home. It's basically they do three things, don't they? They do books, they do craft, and what's the other thing they do? It's books, craft, and like cheap activities outside, like games in the summer for kids to play and stuff like that, bucket and spade type stuff. So it's just those three things. And they're, like you say, there was no differentiator prior to their recent overhaul, but now it's focused really on getting you know, kids doing stuff that's safe and good for you, healthy, rather than working on computers, which I don't think B&M is just like everything to everybody. It's washing products and, you know, sorts of stuff. So this is just on kids. And they were called the works.co.uk, but in all honesty, I think they could drop the online. If it's me, I'd get rid of the online. I was speaking to them, and they don't know what would happen if they got rid of the online. They don't know how much the online triggers sales in shops. Mm. So they're scared to get rid of the online in case, you know, people are being influenced online into going to the shops, but they're not making money out of it. You know, it's losing money. I was saying, if they can get it to just break even or profitability, they'll be happy at that because they know they're not losing money out of it. And it's you know, it's good for the business. They're not losing money, but while they're losing money, it probably burnt the cost of it. You could probably get rid of it, but it's ever increasing. You know, online's tougher and tougher. The amount of costs that go into it, doing search engine optimization and all the other bits and pieces, security and everything else, you know, it's such an hard slog now compared to where it was, and returns and everything else you've got to do online. Trying to make money out of online is far tougher than it used to be.
Yeah.
Unless you're pure, and if you're pure online, you probably do it. But when it's a good retailer and you're having some of your high street stuff stolen from you and bought online, you might be better off just not having it online and letting people go to the shops and buy stuff there and actually pick stuff up when they're in there. You know, so that looks nice, I'll pick that up. So anyway, it remains to be seen whether they keep that going or not. But I do think that there's a lot of low-hanging fruit that they've got to take there now from what's going. So.
We got Beth. She's asking about needs a bit of expertise on this bowl area for Echo Building, which has just gone vertical of late. It basically does modular buildings. It used to be called Fox Marble, I think, years ago. And they're basically doing modular building and then selling it into other countries, I think. But anyway, what's your view on, have you ever looked at it at all? It's only about a 15 million market cap company.
What's the ticker, Paul?
ECOB, Echo Buildings Group. It's basically gone from 2.5p in September at the start of it to 12p. It's four bagged in a month.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Eco Buildings. I think that is, I was calling that. I don't know what that's right.
Eco.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm just looking at the chart. And it's. That was a bowl formula where you could sort of see the bottom would come in, you've got sort of further lows coming, low, 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 and then you had a little low. It was a little bit higher than the previous low, which was for the first time in a while, and then it shot up. I missed it, so I probably weren't bold enough for me to buy, to be honest, especially in a little small company like this.
Yeah.
But I missed that one, to be honest. So I can't say where it's going to go from there. You know, sort of if it's got the chart, and it was at quite a rate, wasn't it? £1.20. Has been any dilution in there at all?
I don't know. The sales are still pretty low. The last 12 months is around about 3 million of sales. So it's on about 5x sales multiple. So you can't value it on a normal valuation metric. It looks as though it's got about 5 million in debt as well.
Yeah, and the shares have gone up 15 times. The number of shares in float has gone up 15 times since 2019. Yeah. Yeah. So there's been massive share dilution there. Yeah. So...
I would take some off the top myself, Beth, if I had those shares, but obviously that's not advice. It's up to you what you want to do. It looks like you've done very well out of it anyway, but you'd probably then treble afterwards. I don't know. Okay, let's move to another one, which is very popular. Stuart is asking about Audio Boom, that is all things podcast in the US and UK. It's done really well over the past few months. And then they had Sky sort of like doing an expose story that it was potentially in takeover talks. What's your sort of latest on this one?
Well, themselves have said that they'd spoken to these companies, but there had been no real bid at all. I've followed them for a long while, and they look like they're one of the real leaders in podcasts.
Mm.
You know, I think they're second or third largest podcaster in the US now, and they're doing video podcasts as well. It was all sort of strange because I can't understand that they sort of more or less put themselves up for sale, and they just bought a company out in a company over here, Adelicious or whatever it is that they bought.
Yes, that's right.
And they only just bought that, and then suddenly they're putting themselves up for sale. So when the news come out, I said, well, that's handy, they're in for a bid. It's, you know, wasn't... they didn't seek it, you know, so I thought someone had come in and made them a bit, it was going to be quite interesting. But then I sat there and I thought, why are they putting themselves up for sale when they just bought another company? You'd probably thought if you wanted to sell the business, it'd be better to let the new buyer decide what they want, and rather than you buy it for them. You know, they might not want it Adelicious or whatever. And so the shares have come back a bit, but it really is illiquid. And it you know, I have far too many probably back a year ago, and it sort of raced up and it came back down again. So I reduced mine by about 2/3. Mm. And then this came out and it raced up, and I took I did buy a few more as soon as the news came out, and I sold them immediately the following day and banked a bit on that. So it reduced my overall cost of the Audio Boom that I've got. And then I sat there and I sort of watched it, and something doesn't ring right with me, so I've reduced another 60%. So I've only got a small amount now.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I think it looks a great little company. They're always, you know, bullish and upbeat, and they come out with loads of these statements about where they're going and where they've got to and that. But then they do something like this, and you sort of wonder: is it a lot of bluster there? And they're finding it more difficult than they actually say. So I don't know. I'm probably going to, you know, I haven't reduced. They'll probably do a deal, and I'll be kicking myself for reducing. But I think it's a, you know, they've got a good position in the market, and they really are, you know, they really have gone for it. But maybe it's not turning into the amount of cash that, you know, they're leading investors to believe. So I'll reduce down quite a bit.
Okay, good. So, let's move sectors. We've got a bit of fashion here. We've got Graham Wells asking a quick thoughts on Doc Martens, the boots. It looks as though the bowl is definitely forming here, but what's your thoughts?
Yeah, there's definitely a bowl forming on there. I looked at it the other day, and I did buy a small few, a really small few, just so it keeps me on my watch list. And then I'm not going to miss them starting to move all of a sudden. Mm. And I think quite possibly. I used to like the old CEO. They've got this the new guy there now. I'm trying to think what his name is. It's a complicated. Yeah, it's a tough old. He's anyway. They used to have K Kenny Wilson, I think it was. It was the former CEO. Mm. And I thought he was really good. And, you know, he told a good story. And then they went out there and direct to market. Looks like it's got to be where they're going to sell from, I think. And I don't really like it as a business, to be honest. Yeah. I'm not sure. Girls in Dr. Martens don't look good in my...
And that sounds sexist, that does, Richard.
I know it sounds sexist. I know it sounds really sexist, but I'm not sure how long girls are going to want to wear Dr. Martens for. You know, it's a fashion for a while. And some of these eco-warriors are well at home in Dr. Martens, but you go out to a black tie do, you can't wear Dr. Martens there. Yeah. I don't care whether you're a girl or a bloke, you can't wear Dr. Martens at some of these swankier do's. And I don't know whether they're the greatest thing. You know, I used to wear Dr. Martens, and they always used to be, you know, couldn't wait to get them off my feet by the time I got home. And so I'm not convinced that it's the market for women. But, you know, they can probably turn it around. It's got down that low now that it probably is turning around here. But I'm not seeing any real stonkingly good director buying to make me really want to back it. So I'd like to see, on top of that bowl, a bit of director buying and a decent trading statement saying they're going to beat or something, and then I'd probably go in and have a good old time there.
Yeah. Okay, we've got a final question from the floor. We've got Andy 2205. Quick one on Hargreaves Services. I don't know if you've had a look at it. It's basically an amalgamation group that does a bit of sort of contracting for engineering and civil works in the UK. I think it's got a sort of like reusable, recyclable type business half joint venture in Germany. And then it's got a land division, which it's selling land off. And it sold off some land this morning, I think. I don't know if you've had a look at it. It seems to be a good sum of the parts story.
Yeah, they often used to be coal, didn't they? They used to, Hargreaves Services, it used to be a coal business originally. And, I've looked at it. It always looks cheap, but it always seems to struggle to get anywhere when I look at it. And they blow hot and cold quite a lot. So I've always sort of just thought, I don't know whether it's my type of share. There's bits going on. I like companies where it's just plain basic, easy earnings, you know. And their earnings seem to come from all different places at times. Mm-hmm. And it's like they're selling off little bits of the business here and there and making a bit here and there and changing their business model here and there. And I know old Castle for Tiger, he's been in it for, Andy Robson, he's been in it for quite a while, and he likes them, and they're probably going higher, but it's not my type of share, really. Yeah. I've dabbled in it for a trade now and again, but the trend on that is quite good. You know, the trend is in a nice upward trend over since 2023. Mm. And it's probably looks like it's on the bottom, the lower end of the trend now on the way up. So there's probably a quid in them or something like that, a quid or two, short term maybe. But it's illiquid. So, you know, when people start selling, it just goes down like a flipping stone. When people start buying, it goes up like a rocket. So you can be whipsawed in and out of that if you're not confident. It's not one I can research enough. To be able to know it that well.
Yeah, just to let you know, Andy, I've spoken to a number of active fund managers, some from Harwood, Downing and Gresham, who all own this, known it for a long time, and they reckon the sum of the parts is over £9.50 on this once they've realised those three divisions. And you can see how it's tripled over the last 5 years. So it's a good dividend paying sum of the parts story that I know some very smart people are behind it, but good. Okay, fantastic. Well, we come to the end of the interview now. Before we close it, Richard, have you got any sort of like stock ideas? Any other ones that we haven't, maybe the ones we've talked about, ones we haven't talked about, that you would think that people should just put onto their stock watch list for the sort of next 12 months?
Zitronic, definitely. Zitronic is probably one of the best stocks I can see out there at the moment. He was trading on a PE of 30 odd. I think he got up to 42, a PE of 42 at one point. Yep. He was trading miles higher than this. At the interims, they did more earnings in the first half than they've ever done in a whole year.
Yeah. What's the ticker on Zitronic again? Sorry.
Zotefoams.
Zotefoams you're talking about. Sorry. Okay, yeah.
That's being dyslexic and Z. Yeah.
Zotefoams.
So they're a foam manufacturer. They've always done sheet foam, but they're making the foam for the soles for Nike shoes. and have got a big five-year contract with Nike. It's 49% of their earnings comes from Nike at the moment, but they've just done a deal with a company out in Vietnam where they're going to be making more of this stuff for other shoemakers and Nike. They used to just have foam on the shelf, but now they're going out to businesses and actually saying to them, you know, what do you need? And we can provide you with this, and we can provide that. Come with us, and we can provide foams, especially for your knee. They can do it to 3D shapes now as well. So instead of having sheets, they can actually mold the soles. The guy that's running it now used to be at Coats. He was 20 years at Coats. He's been in every part of Coats you can think of. He was the president of the company, and he started running it. Since he's got in, they've ditched the, well, I think they ditched it just before he came in. They had the resource, which was like a material they developed for milk cartons. Milk cartons currently are plastic on the inside, carbon on the outside. You can't recycle them because they're two different products to recycle. They've got a recyclable material, which is just one material, and you could recycle it for milk cartons and all sorts. But they only want to develop it. They don't want to be manufacturing it because it's not foam like they would normally do. So they put it out to a lot of companies. No one wanted to manufacture it. However, it sat there and it's waiting for someone to come along. So that's a little added bonus at the end of the day. They're not spading out loads of money on that one at the moment. It's sat there. So if someone comes along and that would be on top of what they're actually doing at the moment. And the thing they're doing is these foams for, you know, the Nike guys tried this foam in their shoes. And they went to a running track and they got these guys to run up and down ordinary shoes. And then they did them in this new foam and it clipped about 0.3 of a second off of the 100 meter running.
Wow.
And all the guys from Nike were jumping up and down saying, oh, what have we done here? You know, it took them 2 years to get into Nike. They've got in there. Anyway, I think the potential for the earnings growth here is massive. Yeah. You know, from what they did on the first half, they've beaten anything they've done in 1 year. Going forward, just looks a fantastic share, and that's my biggest holding. So, take
your biggest holding.
Biggest holding. It's more than Carclo. So take note. I'm saying this. I'm bigging up one of my biggest holdings. So don't believe a word I say.
Yeah. Okay. You know, what percentage of your portfolio is this then, Richard? Over 20%. 25%. Okay. Yeah. Well, so, I mean, you're right. It's only on 13 times PE and the opportunities. It's quite interesting, actually, because Coats recently bought a sports insole foam manufacturer, didn't they?
Yeah. And, you know, they've got the absolute IP on making these foams to different. Mm. So they make it with nitrogen rather than oxygen or air. And so you can control the foam a lot better. There's no putting carbon dioxide into the air when they make the foam. So companies love that too. But, you know, their warehouse is full of sheets and sheets and sheets of this stuff. And he wrote £1 million worth off when he came in. And he said, you know, this stuff just isn't going to sell. It's just sat there for too long. So they took that right down. And now it's about making specialist foams for companies that need something in aerospace. They do it for aerospace. Airbus in the size of planes and stuff like that. So I would say this is one of my bets for a multi-bag or more for the next God knows how long. But it looks a great company. It looks fantastic. Very limited debt. You know, it's pays a dividend. Everything else.
Do they have any tariff exposure at all? Because if they're building this facility in Vietnam that goes into Nike shoes in Vietnam, and then I know Nike import a lot of their actual sports shoes into the States from Vietnam.
No, their exposure is very low, and he said that. And also, they do manufacture in the States anyway, so they have one autoclave out there. They've just doubled it up to two, and so. You know, if you double your capacity in the US, you obviously think you've got some production to come there. And, you know, I think they've got that and they've got the Far East. And, so
you're right. It certainly still looks cheap because I think if I remember rightly, I think Coats bought their insole business for about 12 or 13 times EBITDA. Yeah. And actually, when you look at the current share price, even after the bounce at £4, Zoked Phones trades at about 7.5 times EBITDA on sort of like pre that huge growth you're expecting anyway. So the E can go up and the multiple can definitely go up.
And what we would say is you get this with their, if you look at their chart, you get this sort of rise and then you get this pretty sort of quick sort of like drift off up. And it's bored investors. You know, there's been no volume. All the little bit of a pullback there has been of about 20 or 30 pence. It's on no volume compared to that move up. That was a massive volume, and the little pullbacks on light volume. So they come out with a statement, and the punters go absolutely bonkers, and it goes up on massive volume again. You know, probably 20, 30, 40% at a go, and then it drifts off a little bit. And I think it's a fantastic one. And yeah, I'll give you another two quickly. That would be Goodwin. Which they have got absolutely everything going full gangbusters at that place. And I will be surprised if they don't double again from here over the next 12 to 24 months. They've got this Duvelco, which is like it's called Decoya, the company's Duvelco, which is like a polymer heat resistant that is going to start selling from the end of the year. So that isn't even in the game yet. They're doing these massive, great check valves for out in the oil and gas industry. Their satellite business is going great. Everything in the business is starting to fire on all cylinders. And they've said that they've spent years investing, quite a lot of years investing, and now that investment phase is over. They're going to start paying 58% of all earnings in dividends here on now. So, and the director's been buying a bundle of shares. It's a fantastic company that I bought about £1.70 back in the 2000s, and it's gone up 100-fold, and I was stupid. So I've ever sold them at about 17 quid when I 10 bagged them nearly, or about 8 bagged them, I think.
Well, you're right. I mean, they've also got that deal linked with Northrop Grumman in defense.
120, yeah. So they're building a factory, I think. I think Grumman's stumping up the money for the warehouse that they're building up there to store all the stuff for them. So they're in with Northrop Grumman.
They're in with decommissioning with Sellafield as well.
They built the steel containers for all the nuclear to be able to store the stuff. So they've got so many irons in the fire. It's fantastic business. And after years of investment, it's now going to be another one of these big payout phases now where you get big dividends and share price growth, I think.
Yeah. So, well, after those two, you've whet my appetite. What's the third one?
The third one I would say to watch is Videndum, which is the VID, it used to be Vitec, and it's all the lighting and sound kit for big shows and stuff like that, but the film industry. And they've had a rough old time. But the play on this is out in America, video and film business is taking off. And there's a massive shortage of kit. And Vitec have bought up a load of inventory, and they're selling it out in the US. So the latest trading statement said up 40%. But then they tone it down a bit. But a huge amount, the funding has been, the financing is almost breached covenants, but they've done a deal with financiers that said they'll be flexible on the covenants because they know all this is coming through. So it's one of those, it's absolutely bombed out on the floor at 47 pence, something like that. And I think the last time when it put out a statement, it shot up sort of 60%. I think when they come out with it and they say that they've done all these sales in the US that they've got, it'll probably fly again, because it gets them right off the hook. It's a big amount they're talking about. You sort of look at a company this size and you think, oh God, how can I have that many sales boost all of a sudden? But they've already started to say they're starting to see it happen. So it's one of those where, I won't bet the house on it, but the position it's in, it's high risk and it's got a lot of debt.
Yeah.
So you've got to watch all of that. But it's one of those where, if it does start singing a good song, it's going to be a one bagger in no time, I think, because like I say, these ones with the debt are the ones that fly. So
yeah. What's causing the demand in the US? I didn't realise there was such a big demand for sort of like
apparently there is. It's the filming and video industry, I suppose. All these people doing, like webcasts and other stuff like that, and all these online videos that are doing podcasts and all the other stuff that goes on. For some reason, there's, you know, there was a it's more a shortage than a shortage of supply than a massive increase in demand. Yeah. But the, apparently out in the States, they're going to be stuffed for getting the kit. And they obviously, you know, having been in the business so long, they saw this shortage come in and bought up a load of stock. And they've got it there. And so I suppose that's where a lot of their working capital's gone already by building up stock and stuff. So, but it's just an interesting little...
No, you're right. I mean, I think that everybody knows it needs to do a fundraise at some point in time. But you're right. If it does a fundraise, having sold a shed load of equipment in the States, that will one sort their balance sheet, put them in a better position to raise money. And you could see they raise at a lot higher than 43p. But equally, if they don't sell it, you could see it go, they raise at lower than that. So yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one to call, isn't it?
Yeah, if you don't believe them, they're probably going to and they don't deliver, you're probably going to get stuffed on it, you know. So you're probably going to lose 75% of your money in pretty quick time. But if they deliver, I think you probably these are one or two bag in no time. So that's what it is. It's a risk reward. What do you think? You know, and I think from what they're saying and the way they're talking, you know, can you believe them? I believe them a bit, and I believe them enough to have 2% of your money in there, probably.
No, well, you were spot on with Carclo, because I can remember when they were like 4, 5, 6p or so, 10, you know, basically that sort of level. I thought, right, okay, this has got to do an emergency fundraise. It never actually did it, and is now 60. So you were absolutely spot on with
Carclo. There's no dilution there from when they hit their maximum Carclo. It's just you know, so that's what you're looking for. No, not loads more shares. Like that Eco Builders, 15 times the amount of shares as it was. You know, you can struggle to get back to where you were, but when they don't add a load more shares, you know, that's the secret, finding these companies that can get out of an hole without issuing loads of shares. So, we'll see.
Fantastic. All right, well, brilliant. Thanks for those brilliant run-through of all those stock ideas, Richard, and particularly those last three were fascinating. And thanks, everyone, for your questions as well. And look forward in touching base again in about 3 months' time, just after the new year.
Lovely. Yeah. I'll sober up for it. All right.
Bye.
Cheers.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy, thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.